Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:48 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is June 23rd. I thought we'd kick off with German Bunds because Angela Merkel was out and speaking today about how much money Germany is going to have to go out and borrow. And that is all aimed at what I guess might be considered capital investments and research and development in order to ensure that the economy can compete in future and sustain its privileged position as one of the largest and most innovative economies in the world. They're going to have to spend a lot of money on quantum computing, on renewable energy, on semiconductors, and all manner of new technologies in order to maintain their position of strength. And it's a great time to talk about borrowing all that money. They still have negative yields, so they're not going to have to pay back as much as they borrow. Of course, it's easy for Angela Merkel to make these kinds of speeches now, because she's not going to be the one borrowing the money. And certainly Germany has shown a greater willingness to spend more and borrow more over the course of the last few years. They'd be foolish not to, considering the fact that they get to pay back more, less than they borrow. And if that money goes into capital infrastructure and into high value potential, at least, or research and development, well then the dividends that that would pay in the future would more than justify the quantity of money that needs to be borrowed. And of course, every country is attempting to make the same determination right now. Of course, some have got a competitive advantage in that they're creditor nations to begin with, so they have ample capacity to increase their borrowing. And then, of course, you have others like the UK, where there's a higher interest rate overall, but over the course of the last year, the cost of servicing the debt in the UK, in fact, contracted, and the quantity of debt outstanding increased. This yield, however, does look like it is firming, and that the oversold condition relative to the trend mean has been mostly unwound, and that there's scope here that inflationary pressures will start to bite. Now, that is putting upward pressure on the pound, because that could accelerate the pace of tightening for the Bank of England. And this was, I think, a big pullback last week, and it was all down to the Federal Reserve, but the pound has been one of the currencies that bounced back first against the dollar, and it's confirming at least near-term significance in the region of the lower side of the range. So a number of commodity currencies have also steadied. So the Brazilian real is still holding this move through the five level, and this is from an historic low overall. The South African rand weakened last week, but it has begun to steady somewhat in here this week. So there is certainly this scope here that the commodity complex is going to do somewhat better. Copper prices were quite firm in here today. The LME Metals Index pulled back sharply last week, but it is beginning to steady. Of course, that's only updated through yesterday. But if we look at that copper price, and I'm not typing particularly effectively, I'm afraid, but one thing that we can think about is that China certainly wants to try and bring down the prices of industrial resources. But we have a global phenomenon where there's a lot of money floating around looking for a home, and you have governments that are willing to invest in public works. Now, whether that's research and development or infrastructure development or just a willingness to try and compete internationally and to bolster relative competitive advantages. And then, of course, there is this emotional response to the pandemic, which I don't think gets nearly enough of consideration. Everybody's impatient. I think it's the impatience is something that is being felt just about everywhere. But then there's also this emotional way of thinking that, having been through a traumatic experience, that we need to make the best of it and to build back better and to ensure that some of the inequities and injustices in the world are righted. So there's a lot of willingness to try and raise wages for lower wage people. There's a willingness to help out with debts that had been accrued both during the pandemic and before. But then one of the clearest determinations at something that Europe in particular has been pioneering is the taxing of credit and the real potential that a global carbon tax will be introduced. And of course, when you start dealing with global phenomena, then relative competitive forces start to come into play again. And obviously, Europe and the USA and North America generally are much more sensitive to their social responsibility, global responsibility, and these assumed responsibilities that economies have taken on, and they're willing to increase the costs to both industry and consumers in order to meet their climate goals. There's not a great deal of discussion that goes on as to whether spending $100 trillion would in fact be effective. It would certainly be effective in transforming the global economy, but would it control the climate? That's an entirely different matter. And we just simply do not know. And anyone who expresses a high degree of confidence, I think, must be in their own little world of disillusion, because human beings, we are terrible at making long-term prognostications about what's going to happen 30, 40, 50, or 100 years from now. And we're pretty bad at figuring out what to have for dinner in the morning relative to the evening. So then, thinking that we know for certain what the climate is going to do really does seem to be a rather hubristic way of thinking. But what looks increasingly likely is that we're going to spend the money anyway. And copper prices are certainly firming, and then we can think about the BlackRock World Mining Trust. It got right down to the region of the trend mean, and it's beginning to steady. I don't believe that China have given up just yet on trying to bring down commodity prices, but there's certainly some pushback. And part of the reason for that is because this new global demand function is a global phenomenon and not so much a Chinese phenomenon. So we are also starting to see increasing demand for solar, and solar has popped on the upside in here right now. It is interesting that some of the largest weightings in this ETF are inverter companies rather than solar panel companies. Every single solar panel needs an inverter, but there are many different varieties of solar panel and much fewer in terms of inverters. So Enphase Energy does tend to do better overall and has less volatility and better performance, and it's the same thing with SolarEdge. It's another inverter company, so that's also firming from the region of the trend mean. One, I think, consideration is that when we think about wind and solar, the easiest and best locations have already been taken. So either we go back to those locations and pull down the current infrastructure and rebuild bigger and better, or the planning system needs to change. I think one of the biggest challenges with planning and is that you're stepping on property rights, and you are then and we have to remember that all politics are local. You're dealing with local communities who are in the most part, heavily opposed to these rather large installations. And if you trample on those individual rights, well, then you're going to set up a revolutionary movement. So there's certainly going to be knock-on effects if those types of regulatory roadblocks are not really nuanced in a very sensitive manner. But what it does suggest is that there is a bull market in the new nuclear. Nuclear has got a much smaller footprint. Obviously, there is the potential for accidents, and it is non-trivial, and it is something that cannot simply be brushed away. But the one thing is certain is that new technologies that are being built are much less liable for to be proliferated in terms of weaponry, or have got big meltdown risk. So that is setting the foundations for uranium and for nuclear generally to play a much larger role overall, and most particularly in providing base load. Because one thing that California is experiencing right now is that with the increasing number of batteries that need to be charged, and the fact that the sun sets at almost exactly the same time that batteries start to be charged, then they're seeing a lot of variability in base load. So having all those backup generators and backup gas and well, it's not coal, but certainly gas-fired power stations in California is expensive. And when we can think then about the increasing incentives that are being provided to people to put solar on their homes, well, then all of these factors are contributing to this big question about how to ensure base load. And it's a real question for utilities. Utilities have, of course, been investing rather significantly in renewable energy, but and I think that has contributed to their ability to continue to profit, and they've been insulated from the carbon costs because they've been investing in renewables themselves. But now the utility index is right back in the region of the trend mean, and it's been going pretty much nowhere for the last year. So now the question is, are they going to have to face greater costs and more pressure to invest in even more renewable energy and to completely displace their backup fossil fuel power generation? Because if it becomes more expensive to maintain that backup, then they're going to have to either raise prices or they're going to have to come up with an alternative. And it would suggest that base load capability is going to start attracting a premium. And well, that's where nuclear starts to fit in. And it's also where gas tends to fit in. Of course, you then have to pay your carbon tax on the gas and not for the nuclear. But natural gas prices are steady at the upper side of this range over the course of the last year. And this does continue to look like a recovery scenario overall. When we then think about the Brent crude price, it was rather firm initially in here today and paired the advance, but still holding that move today above $75, and this continues to remain a recovery scenario overall. The big question for gold investors is going to be, how well do these lows hold? The price was not able to hold on to its advance in here today. A good part of the reason for that was because of the dollar. And the dollar was a little steadier and beginning to demonstrate at least near-term support in the region of the trend mean. So that is sapping demand for gold. I do think that it's unlikely that the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates anytime soon, and that they might be talking a little bit and try, and in fact think it was John Authors. I can't remember exactly, but I think it was John Authors who said that they might even have engineered a stronger dollar in order to damp down on inflationary pressures. I think that might be a little far-fetched, but it certainly helps. And the CRB index is still in an upward trend overall. So, oil prices and industrial resources haven't looked back really, and it continues to remain a quite consistent trend. Platinum prices were positive in here today and continue to rebound from the $1,000 area, although not quite able to hold on to all of the advance in here today. Palladium had pulled back quite sharply last week and continues to steady here from the $2,500 area. So we can definitely then say that it's been the precious and semi-precious metals have experienced the most severe pullbacks in the industry or in the metals complex more generally. And then when we look at the soft commodities, well, rough rice was quite positive over the last few days, and it's now right in the region of the upper side of its base formation. So, obviously, this is one of the most important food commodities, and it looks more likely than not that it will break on the upside. And wheat has been lagging both soy and corn, but it is now back in the region of its trend mean and at least steadying in here. The stock market was pretty quiet in here today. The S&P 500 down about 3 points. We're still right in the region of the trend mean. There's an upward bias overall. There's still a lot of horse trading around what's more likely that the growth phenomenon of the last decade is going to continue to outperform, or are we going to get a big rotation into value and into commodities and banks and other cyclicals? Of course, it's all going to play out in the bond markets. And when bond yields rise, then it saps some of the interest in the growth sector. There's this big argument about do interest rates really matter to a company that has got a brand new solution with the potential for exponential growth? And I would argue that it does, for the simple reason that even a company with the potential for exponential growth needs funding, and their ability to source funding and the valuation that's attached to that company will be heavily impacted by the bond yield. So we certainly had the big tail on the candle on today is Wednesday, so it was on Monday. And now the yield is pushing back up again. Now it could quite easily still trend lower. The sequence of lower rally highs has not been broken, but there's steadying in here. And I think when we think about, well, what is the Federal Reserve most likely to do? I think it's extremely unlikely they're going to raise rates. And I think it's unlikely that they're going to rush to raise rates. And they're going to wait until they have absolute clear evidence that inflation is running well ahead of their expectations and trending, and they're also very conscious of their social responsibilities, or at least newly acquired social responsibilities, and the issue that we still have high unemployment. European markets were somewhat weaker in here today, and Japan was pretty quiet as well. So Europe is certainly responding to some of the strength that we've seen in the euro, and also whenever the dollar rallies, it starts to take some of the impetus out of the global markets overall. But if it's not moving back into the S&P 500, and the Nasdaq is still reasonably firm in here and was able to squeak out another advance. Well, I think what we can see here is that investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to growth. And they are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to renewable energy and to energy more generally. They are less willing to give the benefit of the doubt to emerging markets just yet. And when they do, then it's for isolated cases in order to clearly demonstrate and to attract broad-based and persistent demand for emerging markets. We will definitely need to see a weaker dollar overall. And so far, it is holding this upward dynamic from last week. So that suggests that this rotation back into growth might still have a little bit of time to run. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.